So today I'll present a randomized controlled trial of two computer attention training programs for children with ADHD. I'll present data both in our pre-post data and our six-month follow-up results. And I'm at Tufts Medical Center right here in Boston. So I have no conflicts of interest to resolve. So the goal of our study was to assess the efficacy of these two computer attention training systems. One is a neural feedback system, and the other is cognitive training. And that's just the general term. And the goal is to train children with ADHD to be able to attend more effectively. Right now, treatments for ADHD are pretty limited. A lot of people go with medication, and we wanted to try and test to see if these two programs might be an alternative to that for parents, families, doctors who didn't want to go that way for their families. So computer attention training as a whole. So the software reinforces desirable behaviors via auditory and visual feedback. Some advantages are there's systematic, well-defined reinforcement, there's ongoing engagement, there's individualized progress and high frequency and immediate feedback, and the kids really like them, so that's good too. And then also there's been a lot of emerging evidence for sustained effect in these areas. So the first intervention, we used a neurofeedback system. I won't say which system, but it is commercialized. School systems use it in the U.S., and it's very easy to use. And the reason why we chose it and the other program as well is because they're feasible to use in the school setting, and you don't need to be a very highly trained professional to be able to use it. So the feasibility implementation challenges aren't quite as much to leap over. So a little information about the neurofeedback system. It measures both beta and theta waves, and theta waves are prevalent when you're drowsy or sleepy, and beta waves are more prevalent in the frontal brain when you're actively thinking, concentrating, listening to my lecture right now. This is a picture of me. So the neurofeedback system, it's embedded in a standard bicycle helmet, and the EEG sensors detect the brainwave activity. And there's one centrally located on the CZ, if you're at all familiar with neurofeedback, and there are two grounding electrodes bilaterally at the mastoids. Then this is a screenshot of the menu, and these are the different modules that the kids do. This is one of the games. Well, we call them games to the kids, but they're not really fun, just so everyone knows. And so what happens is the child selects a character, and this is the orca. And the orca, as you focus, it swims down to the bottom of the ocean and collects coins, and the child gets points, and he or she's happy. And then as they lose focus, it swims back up to the surface. So the child constantly tries to bring it down, and you know, the sessions are, they do a number of sessions. It's not easy to do on the first time. That's why it requires a lot of time and practice. But over time, they learn how to try and keep it down at the bottom and what that feels like and how to initiate that and sustain it. The second intervention, the cognitive training, also aims at training attention. The computer exercises are very interactive. They're not like regular video games, though. There's immediate feedback, and children progress to higher levels. And something interesting about this program, too, is that in order to achieve the next level, it's very small incremental improvements so that, you know, success builds on success. So we're trying to get that child to just get a tiny bit better, and then they're very successful, and so they keep on going that way. And this is a screenshot, and you can actually select which modules you want to do. So we do a lot of working memory skills, visual motor skills, and attention skills developmental. This is one of the working memory skills. So here the child chooses letter number pairs. So they see the key at the beginning and letters and numbers match. And then they have to match them in this little calculator-like thing in order to open up the safe and win your money. So some hypotheses of our study were that both treatments would result in maintained improvement in ADHD symptoms compared to a control condition at a six-month follow-up. But also on top of that is we kind of thought that just based on the theory of how they worked, that the neurofeedback would be superior to the cognitive training. But that, again, that's just what we thought. We didn't know. So this is the study design. We recruited and enrolled in two cohorts, and this is a randomized control trial, so we randomized into neurofeedback, cognitive training, or the weightless control. And the weightless control component, what happened there is, so all kids signed up, and if you got randomized to the weightless control, you were the weightless for the first year, and then the second year you got re-randomized into either neurofeedback or cognitive training. So everyone received the intervention. And the reason why we did this is, it's a lot of, not a ton of study burden, but we asked parents, teachers, kids, there's a lot of work for them. And so we wanted to grant everyone the opportunity to do the intervention. But for the purpose of today, I'm going to report results on assessment 1, 2, and 3. So recruitment. We recruited from 19 elementary schools in the greater Boston area. Inclusion criteria, formal ADHD diagnosis by primary care physicians in second or fourth grade, and you could be on medication or not, we take you. And then some exclusion criteria, an IQ of less than 80, and comorbid diagnoses of conduct disorder, ASD, other serious mental illnesses. And the reason is, you know, we were really looking at ADHD, not other elements that might contribute in unknown foreseeable ways. So the intervention for the treatment conditions, that's for the cognitive training and the neurofeedback. So it was 45-minute sessions, 3 times a week, which resulted in 40 sessions over 5 months. They were all in school during the regular school day, and all of the scheduling was done on an individual basis. So some of the kids had severe learning disabilities as well, or struggled in math or English or whatever. So all of the scheduling was based on, you know, the intervention RA meeting with the teacher, trying to figure out what worked. And then if halfway through the school year the schedule changed, they changed. So that was challenging, but it was fine. We did it, not a problem. Then the intervention assessments that I'll talk about today are the behavioral observation of students in schools. And this is an objective measure. It's a 15-minute observation, and you do it 3 times over the course of 2 days. And it's an interval. It's an interval observation. So you are listening to an earpiece, and every 15 seconds it says observation 1. And so you have to look up and observe what that child is doing at that very second. And it's a measure of engagement, off-task motor, verbal, and also inattention. And so what happens there is the students that you're observing don't know that you're observing them in the classroom, and then the actual observer is blinded to their randomization status. So they know that the child has ADHD, but they don't know if they're in the neurofeedback, cognitive training, or control. And then there's the Connors, which is a very well-known form for parents and teachers. And this one's for parents, and it's a measure of attention. Then there's the brief, which is, and the parents did this too, and this is a behavioral rating inventory of executive function. And then we also did medication tracking questionnaire. And we asked parents to send back information on, you know, ADHD stimulant dosage and how long they'd been taking it for and whether or not they were doing counseling or other treatments. And then if any of the information that the parents sent back was conflicting with their last form, because we continued to collect this throughout, then we would call the pediatricians and verify and call the parents back to make sure we had the exact correct information. Results. So participant demographics, lots of boys, which is very typical of ADHD. Lots of Caucasian, suburban. Actually, about half of the kids were on medication. And so how we randomized was based on, we did a stratified randomization. So I stratified based on medication status, gender, and school district. The urban kids and the suburban kids might be very different, we don't know, so we wanted to stratify. And then this was strange, so if anyone's worried that, you know, ADHD is grossly overdiagnosed, which I'm sure some people think, our population was not that case. I mean, 67% were on IEPs or 504 plans, and this is in second and fourth grade. So these kids were difficult. I had quite a few kids that couldn't sit in the chair the first day. I had one kid who was crying underneath the table. I had one kid who tried to jump on the table. I mean, they're an interesting, fun crew. And then 23% counseling. So study design with the numbers. So we recruited and enrolled 104 kids. And then by time two, this post-intervention, we retained 102. Two of them dropped out because they didn't like it, quite frankly. And then at six-month follow-up, we had 98. And the three that dropped out there, two of them changed school systems, and one of them actually got a very severe medical thing. Response rates. Parents were pretty good, at least at the beginning. Teachers were very good, and the observers, obviously, we were in control, so they were excellent. I don't know why I did that. Okay, so results for neurofeedback. So this is the pre-post data, and then I'll click again and show you compared to the pre-six-month follow-up data. These are effect size within group. So you can see here, just so you know, Cohen's D effect sizes, a small to medium is like 0.1 to 0.3, medium is 0.3 to 0.5, and a large is 0.8, something along those lines. But anyway, these were all significant. And this is that the boss I talked about, the observation in schools, the Connors parent, and the Connors brief. And then if you look at it with the six-month follow-up data, you can see here how it's crazy how all of the changes that we saw were actually maintained. So this is, you know, we finished the intervention in April, then the following school year in November, that's when we conducted the time three, the six-month follow-up data, and, you know, the data is all maintained, which is crazy, very surprising. Whereas for cognitive training, you can see how the effect sizes are quite a bit smaller. We saw a BOSS off-task motor verbal significant within-group effect size pre-post, but then it went away at six-month follow-up. Whereas the Connors was interesting because, you know, we saw at six-month follow-up, oh, maybe it was a delayed effect. So that was kind of interesting. Then our weightless control did like a good weightless control did and no changes, so not surprising. And then, so medication. So you can see here how the neurofeedback group actually started a few, well, let me tell you about how this was measured. This is methylphenidate equivalents. So we didn't include non-stimulant medication in this analysis, just the stimulant medication. So, and what pediatricians do, I guess, all the time, my boss tells me, is that, you know, you can convert the milligrams to the different stimulants, apparently. So we had this conversion table that we converted all of them to methylphenidate equivalents, and that's how we got these numbers. So the neurofeedback group actually started a few points higher than the other two groups, but maintained pretty much over time, whereas the cognitive training and weightless control both increased about 9.4 and 9.6 milligrams, which is a clinical and statistical significant increase. But just so everyone knows, you know, as kids get older, they get bigger and they might need more medication. And so it's very normal to increase the dosage as kids age. But it was very interesting that the neurofeedback group, the parents decided not to increase it. And again, we had no interaction other than we were tracking this. So, and I just kind of talked about that. Oh. Well, this is actually also the kids who started, who were on medication at time one versus the kids who were not, looked the same. So what does that mean? Either the medication wasn't working, which I'm guessing is not the case, or the kids who were put on medication in second and fourth grade are very severe. And so that was, you know, allowing them to at least get to the level of a normal ADHD kid. You know, so not normalizing to normal behavior, but normalizing to an elevated ADHD level. And then important, kids can benefit from neurofeedback training regardless of medication. So that was pretty cool. So then this is more rigorous between condition results. So our statistician did this 3-point growth model, and he did the reliability based on parents and multiple parents, and over time, since it was 3 time points. And then we were also able to do neurofeedback versus cognitive training using this multivariate general linear hypothesis test. And the two statistical packages we used were HLM-7 for the growth modeling and SysTat version 13 for all the preparation of the databases. So here's all the Connor's parent report, the pre, post, 6-month follow-up means and standard deviations, the coefficient of the model, confidence interval, and significance, and that's for the brief, that's for the boss. So then this is in words. So if you compare neurofeedback compared to the weightless control, we saw that neurofeedback was superior on 9 out of 11 parent Connor scores, 10 out of the 11 brief parent scores, and 1 out of the 3 boss subscales. So the boss, again, is that observation in classrooms. And then for cognitive training compared to the weightless control, they were superior on 1 out of the 11 Connor's parent subscales and 2 out of the 11 brief subscales and none of the boss. But then if you compared the two, NF and CT, you saw that neurofeedback was superior on 4 out of the 11 Connor's and 4 out of the 11 brief subscales. So it's kind of like neurofeedback was best, then cognitive training had some help, and then the weightless control didn't really do anything. So summary of results, it's feasible to deliver both of these programs in schools. The kids liked it, surprisingly. And especially for the neurofeedback condition, it's really great to see that there was consistent, significant improvement. You could still see in ADHD symptomatology 6 months after, you know, we stopped, we weren't doing anything with them. So that was neat. Some future direction. So since we only had 104, I've been looking at these smaller groups, you know, breaking kids up, IEP status, age, SES status, IQ. And we want to look at some academic results and high ODD symptoms, but I don't know how much I can say with it, you know. So, but when we looked at the ODD symptoms, we had a big group of our kids in the neurofeedback who had really, really high ODD symptomatology on the Connors form from parents. And so we looked at them, and they actually decreased their ODD symptoms, like, significantly, which is so strange because we're not even training that in this program. So that was neat. And then in the future, we'd like to include middle schools and high schools. We're applying for a grant right now to do it in middle schools. So hopefully we'll see. So thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you to my teammates. Any questions? Oh, this picture my boss's daughter made in 6th grade. So she'd be very embarrassed now, but... Yeah, so thank you all.
So how do you plan to, or is there a plan to be able to speak with administration in schools about the feasibility of learning and abandoning? Did you do a training like computer last time?
When we did it was different for each kid. So all the training that we did for this project, we did it either 2-on-1 or 1-on-1 RA to student ratio. So each session was managed between the teacher and the coach about timing and what time during the day. And if one of the, so I started with working with the kids and then I changed to my current position. But anyway, when you start, you have to talk to the teachers continuously throughout the year because things change. And you have to be flexible like that with schools. So we were. But in order to get initial approval, yes, we had to talk with principals, superintendents, Office of Research and Evaluation of Boston Public Schools. And then we were also in the Newton Public Schools. I don't know if anyone's familiar with them, but we worked with the superintendent's office, and they said, this sounds great. So.
And just one other question. Did you
Yeah, so that's what I was saying a little while before. They looked the same as the kids not on medication. So that we thought in and of itself was very strange. And they also both reacted to their relative systems the same. So we looked at it as a group, you know, and then you can also see some individual variations within. But on the whole, the kids in the neurofeedback, whether or not they were on medication or not, got better. And, you know, they didn't look any different than the kids not on medication. So that's why I was thinking, my theory about that is that kids who are put on meds in second and fourth grade are very, very severe. And so they're able to just, you know, stabilize to a normal elevated level for ADHD kids rather than a typical kid. Yeah?
So since the parents noted that this works so well, neurofeedback, did they want to get a bicycle helmet and an iPad to use at home? I mean, did they, when you took it away, did they say, wait a minute, this is working? And how did you...
Our parents did... A lot of them wanted us to just continue this service, but it's not real. I mean, it was a service, but it was a temporary service. So, you know, we didn't tell them this is the name of the company that we work with because that's not right. So, if, I mean, we.
But it's out on the market. So
it is out on the market. I guess we could tell parents that now, probably. Yeah. But no, we didn't. They asked about continuity of care. Oh, sorry.
No, so tying it into the earlier talk this afternoon, were you teaching these kids to meditate?
No, but...
brainwave feedback, in essence, helping them?
So what we did that I didn't talk about because I didn't have enough time is for the first 5 minutes of the session, we use this little biofeedback device called a stress eraser. And you put your finger in and it measures your heart rate variability. And so every single kid had to sit down, first 5 minutes was just breathing. You're just breathing because they have their ants in their pants, they're moving all around, they want to talk to you on and on and on about whatever. And so you have to get them to set their mind in, this is where I am now, now I'm going to do my cognitive training or neurofeedback, but first I have to do my breathing to calm my body down. So we did have that. And also what we did to make it systematically the same is the weightless control group also did that, but they had fewer sessions. So,
is there any opportunity of doing a follow up, like, you know, after some time has passed, to see whether the effects are maintained?
Well, so the grant ends at the end of December, so I'm done then, but I hope my supervisor keeps in touch with the families. Right now, I wrote an email, a big email blast to all the families to say, hey, this is the research that's getting published in these academic journals. Here's the link for the PubMed. This is a summary of our results. Keep in touch kind of thing. I hope my supervisor keeps the email. I mean, we have all the information, so we could open it up later, and I think that's an excellent idea. Well, so we did it kind of inherently because all of the kids received it,
yeah.
Right?
It,
so,
yeah,
they had, right, they had fewer sessions. So I guess not really then. Yes. Yeah, all of the two intervention groups got it every single of those 40 sessions the whole time through. And then what we tried to do is, so we used this this biofeedback device, but later on in the sessions, we tried to say, you know how to do calm breathing. You don't need this device because kids, it's fun for them. But we don't want them to go home and say, hey, mom, dad, you need to buy this for me. No, that was not our goal. So we tried to teach them, okay, now you learned how to see what it looks like. Now you know how to do it on your own. And so throughout the intervention, we tried to kind of wean from the device.